Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Travel Hub Podcast. Michelle Bouchure here, your host for today's show. And I'm here today to discuss the current and emerging healthcare cyber threat landscapes and its implication for health facilities across the nation. And that includes tribal health facilities with Denise Anderson, the president and CEO of the Health Information Sharing and Analytics Center, the Health ISAC. Welcome, Denise.
Hi, thanks for having me on board.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you here and to share some information about the Health ISAC. Just talk with us about the environment that healthcare is in right now with everything that's happening in all spaces related to, you know, cybersecurity and cyber threats and things like that. So glad to have you on board. But before we get started, can you give us a little bit of background on yourself, maybe where you come from, and then also a little bit about the Health ISAC for those who perhaps haven't heard of that?
Sure, I'd be happy to. So my name is Denise Anderson. I'm president and CEO of the Health ISAC, and I've been with the ISAC since 2015. I'm not new to the ISAC world, though. I was employee number two at the Financial Services ISAC, so I've been in the ISAC world for close going on 18 years now. And my background, really, I'm not a technical person. I do understand how systems work. I was actually an English major undergrad, and then I do have an MBA. But I was kind of a jack of all trades. I was also a firefighter, EMT, volunteer, and instructor here in Virginia. And so I have a pretty strong crisis management, emergency management background, which really helps in the field we're in right now. With the Health ISAC, actually started in 2010, so we've been around for 14 years now. And we, you know, back in 2010, we weren't really pairing cybersecurity and healthcare in the same sentence. And so much has changed since then. I actually probably came on board at unfortunately, right about the greatest time to do it, because in 2016, we had the first ransomware attack against the hospital, which was Hollywood Presbyterian, in January of that year. And the ransomware attacks have increased ever since. And basically, for our membership, our members are the owners and operators of health, anything that touches a patient, basically. So we have medical device manufacturers, we have academic medical sectors, centers, labs and radiological, pharmaceutical manufacturers, medical device manufacturers, healthcare delivery organizations, insurance companies. So really, anyone in that ecosystem where they're involved with patient care or touching the patient can be a member of ours. And, you know, we're very robust. We have thousands of people on our secure chat servers. You know, the sharing has been phenomenal. I used to think the financial sector was really good at sharing, but I've been really impressed with the sharing in the health sector. And Health ISAC is really leading the way in many ways around a bunch of different things when it comes to, for example, medical device security and other activities within healthcare and cybersecurity.
Yeah, that's great. I didn't realize that it was such a wide range of people who could become a member. So that's really interesting that you said that. And there has to be a wide range, too, of, you know, I'm thinking when at our TribalNet conference last year, we had a session on, you know, heart devices that can be hacked. And never would I ever think about something like that. But, you know, that to me wouldn't necessarily, you know, someone who operates and creates all those, you know, devices can be a member of the ISAC. So that's really interesting.
We've actually done some really exciting work in that space. When I first came over to healthcare, I was really kind of surprised at the finger pointing that went on between the healthcare delivery organizations, who are the users, and the medical device manufacturers, who are suppliers. Uh-huh. And they're both members of ours, right? And they were pointing fingers at each other, blaming each other for the vulnerabilities and issues that each was encountering. And I was like, time out, same team. Threat actors don't care. We need to be working together. And so we've actually come a really long way. I'm very proud of it, actually. We have close to 500 organizations And it's split in half. We have a medical device security council. It's split in half between healthcare delivery organizations and medical device manufacturers. Mm-hmm. And they've worked together over the years to understand each other's pain because they both have issues. It's a very complex issue. Hospitals and healthcare delivery organizations have tens of thousands of these devices in their environment made by different manufacturers. And of course, anytime you come into play with health, with software and hardware, you've got vulnerabilities. And so being able to deal with those and then being able to handle the patching. And then also when they're connected to the internet, that creates another layer of vulnerability.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So it's a very complex issue and one that healthcare is still grappling.
Yeah. And working all together within a health ISAC has got to help, you know what I mean, to bring everybody together. From a high level overview, what is the current cyber threat landscape in the healthcare sector?
So I'm going to start with, we did a survey. We had over 400 executives in the health sector, and we did a survey of them. What they saw were the top five threats in 2024. Mm-hmm. And so they came up with the following. Phishing, spear phishing attacks is number one. Ransomware deployments is number two. Data breaches is number three. Third-party partner breaches is number four. And social engineering is number five. And then when it came to medical device, I'm going to throw that in since we were just talking about it. The top three were meeting regulatory requirements, providing regular and secure updating and patching, and then integrating security into the design and development process. So those are certainly things that we've seen. You know, obviously, ransomware is very top of mind in healthcare right now with the change management ransomware attack that just happened. In 2023 actually was a record year for ransomware attacks, and we had the MOVEit vulnerability, which one of the ransomware groups, the CLOP ransomware group, took advantage of. Health and Human Services actually reported that since 2018, and between 2018 and 2022, there was a 93% increase in attacks, of which the majority of them were ransomware attacks.
Wow.
So it's huge. And I think the other thing we're seeing is vulnerabilities are a big vector for a way for the threat actors to get in. So, you know, obviously staying on top of that, obviously using connections like remote desktop protocol and the vulnerabilities there is another way that they're getting in. And then the other kind of takeaway is that we always need to be mindful of the situations that are out there. And with the, for example, last year at this time, it was January of 2023, we had the KillNet DDoS attacks where the hacktivist group that was not happy that US and EU were sending tanks into Ukraine were not happy about that. And so they attacked hospitals of all things. But because hospitals are so prevalent and people realize how critical they are to the functioning of society, they're becoming a target for some of these groups. And so we need to be very mindful of all the situations that are out there and how they can impact us.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, many tribes have health facilities that face the exact same thing, whether you're a tribal facility or state-run facility or independently owned. You know, that's, like you said, it's that health facility that is, everybody needs it. It's an integral part of our community. So yes, it's, you know, going to be, that high target. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you said you've been in this kind of industry for quite a while. And you've probably been able to see like all these threats evolve, you know, over the years. Are there any trends that you're seeing in terms of like the frequency or the type of organization or the type of information that these, you know, bad actors are going after?
I think it depends on the situation and the threat actor and the motivation. So the first trend I've obviously seen is that we've moved from a fear of privacy, so data privacy, mm-hmm. to now where we're looking at data availability, right? So a lot of these hospitals are having to shut down because they don't have access to their data. And so we've certainly seen the evolution of the threat from one of focused on privacy to one that's focused on operations. As far as threat actor motivations, obviously healthcare, and I think the pandemic really helped elevate healthcare, that they're starting to target it a lot more for whatever purpose, hacktivists, so, you know, the hacktivist motivation, the intellectual property theft. So, you know, especially in COVID when threat actors were trying to get access to the therapeutic IP, intellectual property. And then, you know, we're seeing also the ransomware attacks and ransomware attacks have been an evolution in and of itself. It used to be against small individuals. You know, they would take their pictures and hold them ransom and say, hey, if you want to get access to your pictures again, you know, that was, and then it evolved to municipalities. So, you know, really low hanging fruit. And over time, it's become one where they're hitting large corporations because they can and because it's lucrative for them. And so, you know, for example, we're seeing payouts. I mean, there's rumors right now that there was a payout of $22 million recently to threat actors around the recent ransomware attack that just happened. So, I mean, it's these people are becoming millionaires overnight or over and over again because they can.
Mm-hmm. That's horrible. So how does the Health ISAC support healthcare facilities in, you know, helping to address some of these challenges that these, you know, facilities are facing?
There's a number of ways that we do that, and I'm going to use the change example as one specific one. But before I get into that, we do have committees and working groups, so we have several committees around different topics that are important to hospitals. So, for example, we have a provider working group when they talk about issues particular to them, and then I mentioned the Medical Device Security Council. We have other ones around threat intelligence and those kinds of things. So our members can come together and collaborate around an issue and then do deliverables. So we have white papers as well. Many of them we make available to anyone because we publish them up on our website, but we've had a series of them on identity and access management that are very useful. And then we, of course, do exercises. We have the ability to do custom exercises, and we also do a sector exercise. So we call it the hobby exercise. And that's where we bring together our government partners, our sector partners, law enforcement, and healthcare to figure out ways that we would address an incident on a major scale when it happens. And, you know, so we do webinars, we have events. I mean, there's any number of ways that we help in that respect. But when it comes to, like, for example, change, which I really say is, you know, this is who we are, is that, you know, immediately when the attack started unfolding, February 21st is when we first found out about it. We immediately stood up a separate channel on our secure chat, and we had over 600 people join that channel and start sharing information immediately. I mean, over 1,500 messages in the space of a week were getting traded. And people were, you know, trying to get information, trying to determine best practices. Should we cut off from them? Should we do this? Should we do that? What are the IPs? How can we block? You know, so they're sharing really intimate information with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we were also able to get some intimate or sensitive information that we were able to share back out with the membership that we were able to uncover. But we then also, on that Monday, I believe it was February 25th or 6th, one of those days, we published a white version, TLP white version of the threat bulletin. And we were able to, it was actually amazing. Our website numbers went through the roof because we've not seen that kind of tracking, but everyone was going to the website to get information on the attack. And there was some really solid information there. Mm-hmm. And Health and Human Services helped distribute it. So it was very beneficial. It got out pretty widely. We were also able to use some of our partner organizations like the American Health Hospital Association to get out the word and chime in some others. So we were able to distribute that message out pretty broadly. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, the alert is still up on our website. So if anybody wants to see it, it is up on our homepage. But that's a perfect example of how we come together, especially when an incident is unfolding, to share really important information with everyone. Mm-hmm. Another example I'll use is the Pecha Not Pecha attack in 2017, which was a huge global attack. It was a nation state attack against the country of Ukraine, but it impacted a number of large corporations and small corporations across the globe. Okay. For example, Maersk, which controls 10% of shipping, global shipping, was brought to its knees. Merck, a pharmaceutical manufacturer, was also brought to its knees. They had really good security, and they could detect an intrusion within a couple minutes. But in 90 seconds, they had 30,000 machines bricked.
Holy cow.
Not usable, throw them away. So they had to basically start from scratch. But what happened with the sharing was immediately when it happened, not only were our members able to help Merck, but they also shared information with each other. We had individuals from 30 organizations come together, figure out what the threat vector was, so how the attacker was getting in, how it was spreading across the network, and how to stop it. And we shared that very broadly on our website through a TLP white bulletin so that everyone could benefit from that information.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, by the way, I've forgotten to say that I'm also chair of the National Council of ISACs, and we do share very broadly with the other ISACs. And, with Change, for example, we shared out on our ISAC to ISAC sharing platform called Atlas. And we did the same with Pecha Not Pecha. We didn't have Atlas in place at the time, but we also shared very, with them and on calls with them. Mm-hmm. So we do have a very strong partnership across the critical infrastructure sectors to make sure that everyone's benefiting from the information that's being uncovered.
I think that right there is the key. It's no longer the days of we're going to keep our breach and our information to ourselves. I think everybody has gotten to a point where it's like, we have to share, we have to collaborate and come together and share resources and pool our brains to be able to really take a stand collaboratively to make sure that we are secure, we're in a better place, like we have our defenses up. So it's just so important in health. And like you said, with all the National Council of ISACs and everybody coming together like that, it's so important. So
We need to. The threat actors come together, right?
Right.
They share resources when they need to. So shame on us if we don't.
Yep.
And we like to say here at Health ISAC that one person's defense becomes everyone else's offense. And in healthcare, especially as with all the other critical infrastructure sectors, we're so interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
And so when one person gets attacked, like with Change Healthcare, we're seeing huge systemic impacts because not only they're probably the largest processor of, insurance claims. They're kind of an intermediary between the delivery organizations, whether it's a pharmacy or a hospital, whoever that may be,
mm-hmm.
and the insurance companies. So they're kind of brokering that access electronically.
Mm-hmm.
And when they shut down, it's impacting the revenue streams of the health providers and the pharmaceutical providers. So it's costing, in some cases, I've heard, billions of dollars a day that they're not receiving because, Change is down. So huge, everyone's interconnected, huge systemic impacts. It's a big problem. I have some personal opinions on how we're handling the incident response, not the organization itself, but just as a sector, how we're handling the response and the impact to some of these providers.
Yeah. How important do you feel that workforce training education is in mitigating cybersecurity risks for facilities, insurance companies?
Immensely important. For example, the number one vector for threat actors is phishing.
Mm-hmm.
And when someone clicks on a link that they shouldn't click on, in many, many cases, that's how a threat actor gets in.
Mm-hmm.
So having people understand what happens when they click on a malicious link and how it can impact the organization is very important. you know, and it's more than just saying, don't click on the link. It's like, if you click on the link, this is what could happen. Mm-hmm. It could cost us our company. It could cost, you know, patients' lives, potentially. It could cost, you know, all kinds of things. And when you couch it in that terms and they understand the impact, I think it resonates more mm-hmm. than just don't click on a link.
When, you know, when you have organizations coming to you, you know, asking what are some of the most common cybersecurity best practices, you know, for health facilities, if it's maybe a small facility, and what are some of the things that you point them towards?
So I'll talk a couple of bit about a few technical things, but from an overall perspective, it really comes from the leadership. It comes from the top. It needs to be a mindset that cybersecurity is part of the business investment. And too many times in smaller organizations, especially rural health and probably tribal, it's not a priority because obviously you're wanting to treat patients. And so you look at the, you know, if I had a shiny object that will help me treat a patient and cure a disease versus something to put in for cybersecurity, what am I going to spend my money on? Of course, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But as we're seeing, if you don't invest upfront on cybersecurity, you're going to be paying big sums when you don't. So, for example, we had the University of Vermont Health System. They had a major ransomware attack a few years ago. And the CEO said, he said, before the attack, I wouldn't have probably invested an additional dime on cybersecurity than I needed to. He said, after my attack, which cost $63 million,
oh my God,
here's my wallet.
Yeah.
Right? So mm-hmm. it's changing that mindset. And when you have that mindset at the top, that filters down. So when you say cybersecurity is important, we need to do this, that filters down, that message comes down to the lowest level where they then hopefully understand, don't click on the links, don't do these things because it can have impacts. Mm-hmm. From a technical perspective, you know, obviously knowing your assets, knowing your attack surface, being able to have inventory control and account management, that's huge. Protecting your data through access and identity and access control, least privilege, and, you know, obviously encryption and multi-factor authentication, those kinds of things is really important.
Mm-hmm.
Staying on top of vulnerabilities and patching is huge. And I know patching is very complex in the healthcare world, but it's absolutely imperative because as we're seeing, getting in through the vulnerabilities is the way these guys are getting in. Email protection against phishing, website protection, those kinds of things, you know, any kind of internet connections, monitoring that and managing that through MFA, DMARC, those kinds of things. Having network monitoring, knowing your traffic, knowing anomalies when you see them,
right.
And then having endpoint protection. Being able to have data recovery and backup and backing up not electronically but offline is big when it comes to ransomware because then you're not paying the ransom. You're able to get your data back, right? And then, you know, monitoring your third parties because we're also seeing where third parties are getting attacked as a vector because then they can get access to the main target. And third parties often have access through remote desktop protocols or other ways. They may have credentials that get hacked and used. So monitoring third parties is huge and limiting their access. And then having situational awareness, you know, understanding that's where belonging to an ISAC is really important because you understand the threats that are out there, the campaigns that are going on, the motivations of the threat actors, and the training that goes, you know, having some training behind that as well. I'll give you an example with the hacktivist attacks that I mentioned, the KillNet attacks in 2023, last year.
Mm-hmm.
We had one person that was not a member. We got word that they were on a list to be attacked, so we notified them. But what they told us was like, for 3 days, we've been sitting here. We thought we had a website misconfiguration, and we're scratching our heads. We're trying to figure out why our website's not working and why people can't get access to their data. And if we had only known that it was a DDoS attack, we could have, you know, fixed it in no time.
Shut it
so
down.
That's, you know, that's where that information sharing is like, and situational awareness is so important. And then finally, having an incident response plan. So knowing how you're going to respond to an incident and then making sure you educate everyone as to what the plan is and then exercising it is huge. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when something happens, you can, you know, click of the fingers, start executing on response and recovery.
Yeah, that is a very big deal. And I'm just going to play off that to ask you this next question. You know, when you're looking at an incident response plan for any organization, you know, it's more than just the technology team that's involved in that. So how do you get your leadership to be like, yes, this is super important. I want to be involved. And, you know, because they have to be, it's not like they can't be. Everybody from, you know, that maybe your health director or your CFO of facility, your marketing team, you know, how have you seen organizations successfully navigate getting their leadership team on board to putting together a response plan like that?
I think it's so going back to what you're saying is it's absolutely important to have leadership involved. And that's what I've been saying all along. You've got to have mm-hmm. it from the top. They've got to understand their role and how important it is and then communicate that down. But to get, you know, obviously it's making a business case as to why it's important, right? You know, this is why you need to be involved. This is why we need to be exercising. This is why we need to have a plan. And using case studies, which there are several out there, as illustrations for why it's so important to do these kinds of things. And I think it's really key to understand that it's not going right back to what you said. It's not just a technical problem. It's a people and process problem. Mm-hmm. And it's something that's, you know, quite honestly, I don't know that we'll solve everything, but it's something that could be done, right? It's not, mm-hmm. it's not unsolvable. So I think it just takes a will, a political will, a mental will to take that mindset on and understand the importance and relevance of cybersecurity and then how to plan around that. And I think also when it comes to incident response, the reality is you're going to have an incident. Even the largest companies that have the best security, Microsoft, you know, just had another big incident, will have an incident. And so you've got to make that assumption, but then plan for how you're going to respond to it. And then you'll be able to recover and be resilient. And that's one of our taglines in health at the Health ISAC is collaborating for resilience in healthcare. Because in the end, it is resilience that's important. And that's the mindset that needs to take place.
Mm-hmm. Final question for the podcast mm-hmm. today. Looking ahead, if you had a crystal ball in your hands, what do you foresee as the biggest cybersecurity challenge in the health realm in the next 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, I don't think the threats are going to go away. They're just going to change and they're going to become more complicated and harder mm-hmm. to detect. I mean, obviously we've got artificial intelligence and, you know, all the everything that comes with that. It will bring more threats, but it will also help us be better as defenders. I don't think anything's going to go away, but I will tell you one thing that keeps me up at night is data manipulation. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we talk enough about that. And that is where, you know, think about it. If you had, and they don't even have to do it, they could just insinuate that they do it. But if you had 100 health records and you change someone's blood type, mm-hmm. you say, I changed some blood type of 5 people, you know, pay me so much money to get that information back. You know, think about that, what that could do to somebody if you got the wrong, you know, data on them and then you treated them based on that incorrect data. Mm-hmm. So that's what keeps me up at night, to be honest.
That's scary. It's scary stuff. And that's, you know, why it's so important, I think, to just all the things you said today. Have a plan, be aware, collaborate, join together, come together to build that resilience. This was great information, great conversation. Denise, thank you so much for being on our podcast today. For everybody listening, I will put in the Health ISAC website and LinkedIn information in the show notes in case you want to reach out. I would encourage you to follow them on LinkedIn. They have a very active page with a lot of great information. So it's really informative. Definitely go give that a follow. And Denise, thank you again. I appreciate you being on the podcast today.
Great. No, thank you. It was great talking to you and I enjoyed it as well.
Awesome. Thanks. See you later.
Bye.
For more information on today's podcast, just click on the show notes. If you have a story to share or a topic you'd like to see us cover, reach out to our team on LinkedIn or via email at contactus@tribalhub.com. See you soon.